Welcome to the Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast from the Belle of Vegas. This week, Antoine and I are here with Itzan and Alex, organizers of Fantasy Fest, a fantasy tournament with 17 years of experience. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to episode 6 of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron. Joining us today, we have Alex and Itzan from Fantasy Fest, which is a local event here we're going to be talking about, and then we're also going to talk about some 9th edition wishlisting. Hey Antoine, how's it going?
Going well. You, Paul?
It's going okay. Itzan, Alex, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us.
Oh, great.
Stereo.
Yeah, the microphones work that way. We're high tech on this podcast. Okay, so as always, we're going to go into a little hobby time and some local events, talk about some games, and then we're also going to go into, then we're going to go straight into Fantasy Fest and take a break and come back and talk about some 9th edition Wet Dreams. So I guess we'll get this started, and I'll make Antoine start with his hobby time.
Okay.
Because I think he actually did something this week.
I did something this week, so I rushed 2 Arknar models to be able to finish my Color Tourmente challenge this month, which was a monster or anything scary. So I did the Neoten Abyssian for Relics, which is a kind of ogre with a giant boulder instead of ends. And I also painted the Held Mother, which are their they're not shamans because they don't have magic anymore, but they are the... It's a strange fluff thing. They carry the babies on their back. They don't carry them. They just pop out of the skin. Giant okay. bubble of pus and puff. There's a small creature that pops out. And the creature grows into one of the genies of the genus of the spicy.
That sounds like a strange mixture of orcs with like Warhammer orcs with like the squigs and the goblins and everything else.
Yeah, something like
mixed
that.
Mixed with the what are they called for the trolls for hordes? The
Trollbloods? The whelps.
The whelps, yeah, that just kind of sprout out of things.
Yep.
That sounds a lot like
a bit something like that. And the Eldmunders are the older one that they created too much. So they're all sick.
Dry.
They all dried up. So they're all dried up and they don't create anymore. But they have a presence on the battlefield and generate leadership for the troops.
Well, I noticed that she looked like she'd had a hard life and gravity was taking its toll on certain parts of her. Yeah.
Have you seen the young versions?
No.
No, I'll need to.
Are they
send
super
you
hot? Like,
oh, it... well.
if I was a male Orknar,
orc
then no.
can like it. They probably have GGs or something like nice. Crazy big. So I painted those. I also started painting some 50 millimeter objective to use for Dystopian Legion and War Machine. And started painting my Warlocks. Well, I had tried some paint schemes last show, but I'm settled and I'm started working on the whole squad now. And that's about it for painting. I did also some assembly. I assembled the whole box of the Cauldron of Blood. So the Cauldron, the Blood Rack Medusa, Elibron, which is a character that comes in the box. And also started converting a Battle Standard Bearer for my Witch Elves. And I cleaned a Pirate Giant from Black Scorpion. I think you saw the model.
You need to post that on the Facebook because that model is really awesome.
Yeah.
Who makes that again? Sorry?
Black Scorpion.
Do they do anything else? I've never heard of them.
They do pirate stuff.
Oh, okay. Who would have guessed?
Yeah, it's a Spanish or English company, I think. No, English. And they do pirate models, Far West models, some modern stuff, US and Iraq troopers. And they do some fantasy variant of all that. And the pirate being one of the fantasy one. And he's pretty big. He's almost 8 inches high. So he's taller than the Cauldron with the avatar on it, the new Cauldron, the tiny one I had last year. So it's a really big model and is the details on it are really good. So
yeah, especially, and he had a nice, big, nice scenic base too that looked really awesome.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about using it for my zombie pirates if I do get that list.
The Harkon list?
Yeah, the Luther Harkon list from 2004, something like that. The old dwarf, white dwarf list. But I'm just comparing the point cost from the new vampire.
Yeah, it's a little different, right?
Now, the zombies are, what, 3 points now?
Is that it? Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
and the, in the other list, there are 6. They don't have the special rules, so it will be crappy. But it's fun.
Do it for the fluff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a gun line. A vampire count gun line. They have arquebus.
Yeah, arquebus.
Arquebus. But they have ballistic skill 0. So when they shoot, on the 1, they hit the unit. On the 6, they hit the target.
Lovely.
They're not worth 7 points each. So you need to shoot at stuff that's worth more than you to be able to be rewarded. And they have a bunch of... they have smaller, like deck guns. But it's an arquebus with strength 6 instead. And they also have carronades, which are smaller cannons. But they're move and shoot, which is pretty good. Their strength set of 7 instead of 10. But still good. And they have Queen Bess, which is what they call an Hellhammer cannon. And the Hellhammer is what they use as a port defense cannon in the Empire. Hmm. So they stole one of those cannons, and it shoots like a usual cannon, but it's the
it's small blast template, isn't it?
Yeah, the small blast template instead of a line.
Oh, jeez. Right, so 3 inches wide, a hole.
Yeah.
But don't you also have to roll a bunch of misfire dice?
Every roll time you two misfire dice for the initial distance.
All right.
And you have 2 chances of it blowing up.
I like those odds.
Yeah. So the army is pretty interesting. They have a bunch of other monsters they can use, and undead ogres, exploding zombies, and stuff like that. So it's gonna be fun. I started them when the list came out, and I have 2 units of zombies painted, I think, and a bunch of are already assembled that weren't in the box because I had other stuff to do. And I got them out this week to... I don't know why.
Because you felt like it.
Yeah, I felt like it. I don't remember what brought them back to my memory, but...
Maybe we'll see them in enough times somewhere. Well, that's 4 or 5.
That's exactly why. They are in the Nagash one, Luthor Arkan.
Okay.
He's in one part of the fluff.
Yeah, well, when they attack Nahakara.
Yeah.
He shows up to support them. He actually saves Manfred.
Yeah, that's why. So with that, they have a fleet battle, and then he helps on land unloading zombies and cannons. So
and pillaging along the way. So it actually makes him late for the battle because he stops to pillage every single city on the way.
Yeah. And that brought to mind that I had all that stuff already assembled and ready to paint. So that's why I started working on the giant. And that's it for my hobby this week, in the last 2 weeks.
All right. Let's...
That's already a lot better than the last time.
Well, that's more than you've done in the last 4 episodes, so that's pretty good for you. So let's go to the guess. It's in.
Yeah, I'm a bit intimidated about what Antoine did, so I've got less. I've got some kind of fantasy fest to prepare. That's about my hobby. But since I will play Wood Elves. I've got the new book, and I have to be the standard of the new book. Before, I was a lot of Woodland Spirit. And with the new book, the Woodland Spirit, are not that good anymore.
How do you like your 6+ ward save there, buddy?
Yeah, I can live with that. It's the strength. The
strength difference went down, too.
Yeah.
From 4 to 3, right?
Yeah, down to 3 to 4 for the treekin and things like that. So.
And 5 for the treeman. So they all dropped 1 strength.
Yeah.
But I've got a bit of archer to get worked out. And my woodland scenery from Game Workshop, because in the book they say you have to play the woodland
Citadel
scenery.
Woods.
Yeah, Citadel Woods. So I've got a new one, preparing it for the Fantasy Fest, and it will be ready.
Only 1? Don't you need like 4?
If you want to play some magic item, but the one you are allowed to deploy.
That's right, you get one base, right?
Yeah. But there's a magic item you can buy for 100 points that can, from 1 to 3, you get.
Yeah, D3.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the acorn or something, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I can't remember.
So one would be okay for me. At what, $30 each? That's,
okay. 42.
$42.
If so, you get no deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's about it for me.
Yeah, I think I have a Wood Elf army too. Big surprise, I know. I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get one and use it as a template. Okay. To make like wooden bases with sand and stuff to make other forest templates, because I don't even like the Citadel Woods that much. The trees lose their those plastic leaves seem to come off every one of those trees I've ever seen. In fact, at Fantasy Fest last year, I had to fix a tree that I kept breaking on a table nonstop.
Yeah, the foliage is very, very, very flimsy on those models, unfortunately. Unless you epoxy them or you make a big blob of like hot glue, you're bound to lose them every time you move that tree.
Yeah, it's ridiculous because it's only attached by one little plastic peg. So, and it's like, mm-hmm. And they're giant. They're big pieces of foliage, right? So leverage says they'll come off.
Yeah. No, I think it's my first piece of Game Workshop scenery, and it's okay. I'm better working out with something else than buying it.
So, yeah, I mean, it doesn't look bad. I don't mind the aesthetic of it. I just think it's unfortunate that those trees just fall apart so easy.
Yeah, but I think everything Game Workshop do is often on the look, it's very great, but the cost you have to pay to all these pieces. So, no, that's why it's better to work with something that you got and do your own.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily like the Citadel Woods, given the true line of sight rule of 8th edition. It doesn't hide a lot because the template is huge and there's only three trunks on that template, so it doesn't hide a lot.
Well, trees don't actually affect anything anyway, do they? Like -1 to shooting, I guess. Do they really?
Well, before, let's say 7th edition,
yeah,
you could not shoot through a forest,
right?
If it had,
which makes sense.
Yes, yeah, if it had one tree on it or four, you could not shoot. Now with true line of sight, if you see it, you see it, right? So, and in a game where movement is of the essence and trying to hide your stuff, that template of wood just doesn't cut it for me. So I most of the time use a battlefield and a box woods.
Yep.
And I bunch a lot on the template, so it actually hides stuff. I cannot see through a forest. No.
And yep. Then you move your troops to the forest and it's a pain because you have to remove all the trees and put them back.
I don't really mind that. They're light. It goes fine. Yeah. It's just, you know, I'm not a fan of the true line of sight rule. So.
Oh, no. That's I think that's...
Was that a topic already?
It's I'm sorry. Prelude of the...
Yeah, it's some of our wish listing stuff. Okay. I think
we agree on that point.
Good.
All right, Alex. Sen, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Alex, any hobby from you?
Oh, actually, quite a bit. I've been gaming for 21 years, so I got like a couple of armies at Warhammer. For the Fantasy Fest this year, I'm showing up with my High Elves, so I'm building up a Flamespire Phoenix. I don't really Yes, I love it. I don't really like the way the paws of the Phoenix, either Frostheart or Flamespire. So I modified it to as if it was swooping, so its legs
are pointing. So legs are further forward?
Exactly. The wings are swept forward, and I put some flames on the base itself just to simulate the wake of fire, the rule wake of fire. So I'm, you know, playing around with that. I modified the head position and all that. I love to try and convert a couple of models.
That kid, I've assembled one of those, and that's not easy. Like, moving the wings forward and stuff, because of the way the wings are layered, like with either the frost effect or the fire effect... I mean, those pieces are made to fit, right? Yeah. So if you're moving the wings forward, that means all those other pieces need a lot of work to try to make them fit too. So it's pretty...
It's actually not that bad because really? I just reversed the wings. So they're curved, let's say, forward instead of upwards. Okay. And obviously, green stuff is my friend. So I fill the gaps here and there. So it looks like...
You and green stuff are closer than me and green stuff, it seems.
Oh, yeah.
We talk time to time, but we're not really friendly. Yeah.
I'm not a famous sculptor, but it gets the job done. And modifying the head position as well, so it looks downwards. So that was quite a challenge. At the same time, I don't intend on using Teclis at the Fantasy Fest, but I think the miniature is too bland. he just disappears in any regiment you stick him in. So I put him on a bunch of floating rocks in the plastic, right. High elf mage plastic.
Yeah, the mage plastic, it comes with the floating rock.
Exactly. So I put him up there. Then I had a huge balance issue, so I loaded the base with pewter just to make it heavier. Did the same thing with you. Do you remember the Eltarion, the blind?
Yes, the nice model.
Yeah, when he's a sword master. Well, I'm using that as my lore master, and I put them on a smoky effect that there was in that high elf mage kit.
Yeah, that's right.
So I have him crop up there, so he stands out within his like sword master or that. What else? Antoine has a Archon zombie pirate army as a side project. I have a halfling army as a side project, fifth edition halfling army project.
I still have some if you need more.
That project for what, 11 years, 12 years, something like that?
I'm up to 3,000 points now if I use the Lizardmen rules. So I'm using ogres as what you call them?
Croxagores.
It's an all-skink army, so an all-halfling army. I'm using Luminarchs and what you call them, old war wagons, as Stegodons, Bastilodon, and all that. So I'm still, you know, going here and there a couple of times a year. And yeah, the army's in a shoebox, but it's there because yeah, it sounds right. I've been dabbling in and out of halflings. Fifth edition halflings are the best, you know, fat little pudgy buddies.
Yeah.
And yeah. Hobbying, that's about it. That's what
they use the hold pot for the catapult cauldron for the salamanders.
What I'm doing actually is I'm using the hot pot, putting it on a 40 mil base, and I'm using old dark elf warhounds and chaos warhounds. They look like Rottweilers, so I'm putting a few on the same base so that they're guarding and they're carrying the cauldrons themselves. So it looks as it can move 6 inches and at the same time shoot that splurt. So yeah, hot pots are my salamanders.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm a lot of thinking went through that.
Yeah, you can really see it's a lot of like creative thought to try to figure out, you know, what can this count as and how can I model this to make it fit.
Using a Luminarch as a Bastilodon with an Arc of Sotek on it because it's a beam type of type of weapon. So and putting a what you call them, demigriff. To justify the number of attacks and strikes and all that. So someday, somehow, I'll show up with my halfling / skink army. It'll rule. It'll be nice. But yeah, pet project amongst others. I'm addicted to those miniatures. I have a problem.
Yeah, I think you're not alone.
Yeah. So that's in the recent weeks, that's about my the extent of my hobbying. A lot of basing as well. I have 11,000 points of high elves, but half of it is based. So in preparation for Chaos Ludzik or Fantasy Fest, I had to do a lot of basing and just not dipping them in sand, but actually doing something cute with it.
Did I see you playing high elves at Fantasy Fest? At Chaos Ludzik?
Yes, you did.
You played them in the team tournament, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if you played them in the singles, but...
No, I was just there with my... High elf partner. We did two high elves because we wanted to benefit from the alliance rules that nobody knew at Chaos Ludzik, by the way. Everybody thought, oh, you're or forces of order, so you can use BSB from both armies. No, you have to be of the same race. So we wanted to, you know, maximize the effect. So we showed up two high elves armies. I went for fluff and I got tabled. So, that's another topic. Yeah, don't do a Tyranok army. Don't. Try not to.
Tyranok, okay, so
charioteers, light chariots, spearmen, spear elves.
Well, that is the better of the two chariots in the book.
No, lion chariot, in my opinion, is the much better one.
Really interesting.
Yeah. We're getting sidetracked, but
that's okay. That's what
there's.
We do.
Yeah, there's a Tyranok chariot that's 70 points, which is all right. Then you have the Skycutter, who's 95 points, and point per point, it's better than the Tyranok chariot because it's got more attacks. More strength from the steeds.
And it has the shooting, right?
From the better save, but you have to pay for that. You have to pay 25 points to get that semi-working ballista. And then you have the Lion Chariot, which has the better save, 4+, better strength from the steeds, more attacks from the crew, or better attacks from the crew, but it comes at a cost as well.
So, yeah, I think it's just over 100 points, isn't it? Like 110?
120.
Okay.
120, 95 for the Skycutter, and 70 for the Tyranoc Chariot. So, yeah, I tried to go all out with my Tyranoc Chariot, and it didn't work.
Things did not go as planned.
No.
Or maybe they went exactly as planned, just you figured the plan wouldn't work. And
well, kudos to my adversaries, but everything worked during that tournament for my opponents, not me. Gaming-wise, I didn't get much done. I played one game of Triumph and Treachery.
Oh, nice.
I really, really like that, because often we're in odd numbers of players. Triumph and Treachery does allow that. Because before that, there was one battle system in a obscure White Dwarf of 1998 or something like that, where you could play a three-way battle. But now they, with Triumph and Treachery, you can play up to five, where it's like Royal Rumble, one against, you know, everyone. So it's a really interesting concept. I like the way you score points. I like the effects, the randomness of I can use this card, that
card. Yeah, you got card system.
Yeah, the card system's interesting as well. And when you're an odd number of players, it's really, really interesting. And you can screw people over when you're not even related in the battle or what's happening. So.
Did you play with the mercenaries? Or
No, I'm keeping it simple for now.
Because the mercenaries really add a whole lot of confusion to it. From what, yeah. Fun confusion.
Yeah, just the cards and the basic armies. And a lot of fun. Versus, what was it? Skaven and Bretonian, is actually.
Skaven. I hate Skaven.
Yeah, nobody.
Stupid Dread 13th.
So, that was about it. So, pretty busy.
Okay. Well, we'll go into my hobby. We'll skip your gaming, because you already did your gaming. So. Unless you have more gaming you did.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
No, that's
okay. There's, it's not a big deal. Our format's not exactly written in stone.
I was supposed to try and play Etienne last week, but that was a wash, because we just started talking Fantasy Fest, rule this, rule that, how we're going to set up this and that, and then came 11 o'clock at night. You want to start the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not it's too Tuesday. Sure.
Yeah. It sounds like us when we're trying to record the show.
So that's it.
Okay, so I was actually pretty prolific hobby-wise, too. So I finished a Chaos Chariot, which I've been working on for a while. I still have the Charioteers to do, but the Chariot's done. My Siege Chariots that Steve keeps asking me why the hell I'd ever paint them Siege. Because no one makes Siege Chariots. They have a 6+ ward that makes them awesome, right? Right? Oh, okay.
If you say so.
And to complete my killer list with the Siege Chariots, I did my Dragon Ogres. Got to work on my Dragon Ogres. Those are all painted now.
Are you swapping the Gore Beast with the Steeds, or are you just fixing...
No, I've got more chariots to do, of course. Okay. Yeah.
Some people try to save up and just do
a... I'm too lazy for that. I just buy more chariots. It's easier that way. I have a problem. It's the way I am. So I did my Dragon Ogres. I've got some details to work on, like their claws and stuff and their bases, but the base paint is all done. And they came out pretty... I'm pretty happy with those. I mean, I won't be competing with Monsieur Fontaine anytime soon, but they came out nice. Then aside from that, I assembled a whole demon army. Yeah. So Glotkin came out, and I'd been wanting to do a Khorne-themed army for a long time, and I'd bought the demon book, and I'd kind of looked at it. The problem is, demons, half their units I don't really like. I mean, bloodletters are cool, bloodthirsters are cool. There's got to be other stuff in there that's cool.
Don't
give me a second.
The skull
cannon. Oh, they're not cool, but you have to have them. There's realistically no way you need to have them.
Auto include.
Yeah, sadly. Yeah. Ugly ass model. Terrible.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing worse than assembling one of them was assembling the second one.
they missed that one.
And then I did Blood Crushers, which aren't very good either, but they look cool. And I like my Skull Crushers, so I did some Blood Crushers. Anyway, so the Glotkin book came out, and then I realized, I can make a combined army. This is great. So I'm going to make an all-Khorne Legion of Chaos list. So I did 25 Bloodletters. I've got a unit of 20 Warriors, a Khorne Demon Prince, a Khorne...
Bloodthirster?
Bloodthirster, yeah. Two Skull Cannons, and I've got, actually, it's not completely assembled yet, because I've got a unit of ogres coming. They're 8 corn chaos ogres. I think that was about it in that list. Hmm. Yeah, the original list was, because I don't know if you guys must...
No beastmen in that combined list.
I actually didn't think about it until afterwards. I do like a lot of the beastmen models, but I've never read the book, so I don't even know what they do. So I've never seen anyone play them, which probably gives me a hint of what they do. But I kind of like their minotaurs, so you never know.
Are the new minotaurs? What, too much muscle on them?
Yeah, but they're
beefcake.
Yeah,
beef.
They're okay. Yeah. Beef. I don't know. There's a lot of neat models, but like I said, I've never seen anyone play them, so I have no idea what they do. I know they're one of the worst books for up there with traditional Tomb Kings, which I also have an army for. You know, the fact that they suck doesn't bother me. I just...
No, but they have some beautiful models. I because I play with Elf, I play Beastmen, and the Gorgon is I like the big Gorgon. I like it very much.
Yeah, he's awesome.
You don't put it on the table, though. There's no way to make him to keep him alive, though, with cannonballs or even bows. He can die. Though. So that's the problem of this book, though, from my point of view. Though. The troop are okay, but outside of that, though, so you always play the same thing. So.
Yeah, but I was reading something or listening to someone talking about. Is Brass Bowl or something? There's a character that's got like a 4+ ward.
Yeah, but that's a special character.
But now you can give him a mark at siege apparently, which gives makes that 4+ ward a 3+.
I'm not sure. I never played him though, so well, I don't remember.
And again, I haven't read on it yet. But they were talking about it was a Dimensional Cascade podcast was talking about it. How you might actually be able to make a useful character out of him if you tried now.
Yeah, because in the Chaos Legion book now you can put marks on Beastmen. So
Beastmen, but only those with the asterisks after the name. I think only generic characters add the asterisks.
Yeah, that's why I didn't realize it was a named character. That's what kind of so maybe they were wrong in their podcast
because the named character has a 1+ armor save because it's like a gold skin or something like that. But I don't think it has.
But when you roll a 1, he die instantly, something like that. No, I think it goes through. It pierces armor at the precise point, and
wow.
That's why.
Way to go, GW.
Yeah. So
how to make a potentially cool model completely useless.
Yes. They're good at that.
Wow, that's horrid. So, I ended up assembling all those demons. And it was not fun. And yeah, I have to agree with what you're saying. The Skull Cannon, what a ugly model. I don't know what they were. You know, I'd never actually seen one close up. And I was looking at it, I'm like, oh, it's actually got skulls in the barrel. You can see it's loaded with skulls. Like, okay. And I'm assembling it, I'm like, oh, you can mount the blood letters on the front of it. Why would you ever want to put anything on the front of the cannon so it can get shot in the back of the head by a cannonball or potentially eaten by the giant mouth that's on the front of the cannon? Who designs these things?
Hey, beaming engine.
The fact it looks like a motorcycle out of Tron with a cannon on the back that's demonified.
But when the first images were going out on the net, people were calling it the Segway of Korn, something like that. So,
but I don't know. I think it still might be nicer than the Hell Cannon.
Oh, I like the
Hell Cannon. I like the Hell Cannon too. I think it's the
crew of Chaos Dwarf.
You can like the Chaos Dwarf crew. I don't know. I think if I ever did a Hell Cannon, I'd probably use like the Chaos Dwarf the Magma Cannon or whatever and just say it's a Hell Cannon and go from there. Anyway. So yeah, that was my hobby. I don't think I did anything else.
You just assembled the full army.
Just assembled 2,500 points.
Yeah, well, this is me, right? So it's not like I have a life with a newborn baby and all that stuff. Yeah, so I guess that's it. So I guess we'll go into gaming. Antoine, did you get any games in?
Nothing.
Excellent. Moving right along. It's how about you?
Yeah, like Alex told us, we were supposed to play, and we talked too much, and we didn't play. The week after that, I was supposed to play with one of my teammates at the Fantasy Fest, Patrick, and it didn't go well, so we didn't play, and that's about it. So, but like I wrote, I play with some board game with my family, though. That's the best gaming I do.
Well, that counts. What board games?
Oh, I like to play with the children. At the young age, I've got a daughter of 12 years old, and my boy is 10. But when they were very, very young, we played Dora Candyland, and I find it really boring. So we started playing with my wife our games, though, Colon of Catan and things like that. And they get through it. And now at 12 years old, she can my daughter can beat me at Colon of Catan. They're really fast on it.
Nice.
And last week we played Agricola.
Oh, that's a good game.
Yeah, and the children, they're
the family good. Version or the advanced version?
The advanced version.
Oh,
yeah. When you start young with them, you can do something. And,
okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah, exactly. So, if you don't want to play Dora Candyland for the next 10 years, start playing adult game fast, and and it's more interesting. It's our family moments are often around board games like that.
But that's good. It gets them involved. See, my problem is my wife is. She likes board games, but she likes Dora Candyland. Yeah, that'd be right up her alley. Okay. You know, if it's got dice and you move around a board over and over again for no apparent purpose, that's exactly what she wants to play.
Okay.
It's tough. It's not my style of game either.
No.
And a couple of years ago, we tried playing Small World, which I don't know if you've ever played.
Yeah, I have it also.
Yeah. Too complicated.
Okay. No, but it can be with all the... You get one,
we're playing
one
the basic
civilization
game.
Out, and you've got the other one, and which one is mine? And no, but that was the Christmas gift for my boy 2 years ago. So it's his game, but we play in family. You know, but
I've been kind of shopping for games to play with my wife. I've come across one recently called Machikoro, which is a new release, just came out. And it's not a board game, it's a card game. But the idea is that you're trying to build a city, and the cards have different buildings on it, and the buildings generate revenue. So every turn, you get base, you get $1. You roll a die. If you roll a number 4, and you have a building that has a number 4 on it, well, you do whatever the building tells you to do, whether it's take money, pay money, do whatever. And the idea is that there's buildings you're trying to unlock, like airports and whatever. And when you have the four buildings unlocked, you win. So it's super simple, but it's got a backstabbing element, because some buildings, when you roll, let you take money from other people, or when some of the buildings generate effects on other people's turns.
Okay.
So I think one of the buildings is a coffee shop, and it's number 5. So if your opponent rolls a 5, everyone who has a coffee shop gets to take money from him because he stops at the coffee shop, essentially. So there's some really annoying stuff. You can corner the coffee shop market and really make people miserable.
Yeah, I couldn't play that with my wife. She is a sore loser, and especially if it's coming from me. So anything I do in a game, if it's directed toward her, it ends on me sleeping on the couch.
Pay it for the next week.
First time I played a game with my wife, we hadn't been dating long, and it was her and her sister and her sister's boyfriend, and they were playing a childhood game that they'd had called Fireball Island.
Yeah.
Which is a big game, and it's a big 3D game. It's a plastic,
molded... kind of Milton Bradley game?
Yeah. Okay. So it's a big island, and it has marbles, and the marbles are red.
It's a volcano.
And it's supposed to be a volcano. And the idea is that you're trying to get to the center of the volcano and take the magic gem,
okay,
and then escape off the island on a boat. And when you get certain cards, you can play them, and it causes a fireball, and you get to roll a marble, and the marble has little alleys, and it'll roll down, it'll knock down people's playing pieces, and they respawn in the crater.
Okay.
And they can be on bridges, you can knock them off the bridge, and they fall into lava, and they go down, you know, whatever. So, I asked for a quick explanation of the rules. And there's a way you can bypass half the board by going through a cave. And basically, you roll a die, and you come out at one of the random exits. And there's one right next to the gem. So, the common strategy they seemed to use was to go into the cave and keep rolling until they came out next to the gem, and whoever would get that first would win. So, I'm like, that seems silly, but what's if you go the long way? They're like, well, you can go the long way, but the only thing is... you get a token that lets you trade in your hand for another hand. I'm like, okay, no one does that? They're like, no, it's stupid. Just go for the gem. I'm like, okay, interesting. We'll see. So we start playing, and I go the long way, and they're like, long way. That's going that way. So I get my token, and you collect cards, and I'm trading cards, and I'm building a hand. And then it gets to the, you know, I basically run to the end of the board. I completely ignore the gem, and I just go to the end, and I wait for them. And then they come at me with the gem. I played my hand, killed all the players, stole the gem.
And won.
Started making my way towards the exit. They all got up, traded in, got another hand, killed all the players again, and then won the game.
And they don't want to play
They don't play you me again. Anymore, yeah.
No, okay.
And this is my wife looks at me now. She's like, he's thinking. I don't like it when he thinks. Look at him, he's thinking, he's planning. Like,
well, Yeah. Generally speaking, with the ladies, not too much confrontation in a game. They don't like that.
No.
The direct confrontation, the military games and things like that, yeah, not too much.
But with you playing with the kids, they probably all gang up on you.
Not necessarily. But it's easier to gang up on me. But they, like I said, they get the strategy and they know when. This one is getting better, so we'll get. So no, it's fun. At first, we let a lot of things go by and help them. But now,
They don't need the help anymore. Now you need the help. Right?
No. We created monsters. So
trained from birth.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's a fun time, like I said, and it's our family moment. It's there. Like everybody will look at TV also, but we can go outside of TV to get together and do
something. Well, you actually have interaction. TV, you don't interact. This, exactly. You're interacting, so it's good.
Exactly.
I think that's ideal.
And I don't get bored playing Dorek and Dylan.
Nice.
That was the base of all of that.
Alex, aside from the Triumph and Treachery, did you do anything other gaming? Or?
Oh, well, plenty of gaming, board games, short games like that. A lot into a Game of Thrones second edition board game. Awesome.
I haven't tried that. Isn't that based off the... that was books. Based off another board game, isn't it?
A Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
It was based off... the second edition is obviously a spin-off of... Or an improvement of the first edition. Now the spin-off of that game board... that board game, I'm sorry, is Battle for Westeros.
That's what I was thinking.
Miniature gaming.
Battle for Westeros is the one I was thinking
of. In the world of Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah. And that was based on battle lore.
But yeah, exactly.
The base game is not based on another game.
Oh, okay.
So that... Dead of Winter.
Oh, you tried that?
Yeah, I tried that. It's tough. You remember a couple of years ago there was a Aliens game like in the movie, so you had to create like four characters at the same time because your rate of survival is pretty low. Odds of survival are pretty low. Same thing for Dead of Winter. You have at least two characters. You can get more characters because they're bound to die fast. So it's quite interesting because it's a co-op game, but at the same time you have personal objectives. And in order for you to win the game, well, as survivors of that like winter zombie apocalypse, as a gang, you have to survive, but you have to accomplish your own personal secret objectives to win the game. So a lot into those kind of games. So Game of Thrones, Dead of Winter as well was pretty nice. Got back into playing Knights of the Round Table with my friend, my brother, and my sister, which is again a co-op. A game, but there's a chance that you're a traitor. So at the beginning of the game, you secretly draw a card, and if it tells you you're the traitor, well, you have to act consequently and not get yourself caught. So yeah.
And there's not always a traitor in every game.
No, because there's.
Oh, that's interesting.
Depending on the number of players, you get a certain number of cards, and there's only ever one traitor card. So you might never pick it because there's eight cards, and let's say we're four players, there's just four cards that are picked. So you might not get a traitor. So interesting because it keeps the suspense alive.
Yeah, because you never know.
Exactly.
That's pretty cool.
There's that concept too in the Dead of Winter. So you have your personal goal that you need to do, the whole team need to win for you to win, and there might be a traitor on top of that.
Yeah.
That there's a lot of interaction in that game.
Yeah. Super fun game. Yeah. And there was also Terra Mystica, which is a fun game to play as well.
Never heard of that one.
No. Basically a game where you have to create your own kind of civilization. You create the cities, house, churches, and you gather points. I think there's 16 different races that you can play from. All have different advantages depending on where you are on that said board game. You have to terraform because you can only ever produce houses or buildings on the land which you're comfortable with. So yeah, it's daunting to begin with, but at the end of your first game, you're like, okay, maybe I should have went listen. So the rules, they grow on you. So it's an interesting game as well. And yeah, that's about my gaming in the last couple of weeks.
Okay, well, I didn't do anything that exciting. I played a couple games of fantasy.
Well, so. I would have traded all the board games in the world for a couple of games of fantasy.
So I played one game against our buddy Leonard. It was a small game because he wanted to see how well he has a Skaven army, and he seems to be in love with basic rats. So not slaves, but the
clan rats.
Clan rats, yeah. And he just believes in lots of clan rats. He goes, it's not effective, but it doesn't matter. It's what I like, so that's what we play. So he's like, I want to see how well the army does at a slightly smaller point values. So instead of playing the usual 2,500 points, we played like 1,800 points or something. Some odd size. And as always, he managed to Dread 13th my big character bus with my, you know, mage and everyone in it. And turned a game where I was crushing him into a game that was very, very close, and I won by like 200 points or something. Because, you know, that's just what he does, because he's a jerk.
Different school of thoughts. Eh? A lot of people go with the bus with like a couple of characters in it, but if you lose it, you...
Well, I had my character, was a unit of warriors, and I had my sorcerer in there. But a level 4 chaos sorcerer is a lot of points, and he wasn't, even if he was tooled up, it doesn't matter, because nothing stops that spell, right? If it goes through, it goes through, that's it. And I six dice tried to dispel it, and rolled like a 13 or something. It was ridiculous. Yeah. it was terrible. Yeah, so I lost him. But he always does something. Like, last game we played, it was the Watchtower scenario? Where there's the tower in the middle of the table?
Mm-hmm.
And he had the spell that let him destroy buildings, so he just dropped the building on top of all my units that were in it. Because he's like, if I can't have it, nobody can.
It's alright. There's a fact for that. If the tower's destroyed, it's whoever's closest to the middle point of the ruin, so...
Yeah, well, yeah. That's what we played, but it was just like, you're speaking...
Losing your 20 warriors that are in the tower,
yeah.
Yeah. I see that.
It was a fun game all the same, and that's when we decided that night that he was going to play in Fantasy Fest with us. And you come over the next, we did a painting night.
I saw the end of the game, and after that we painted.
Right, and we decided that he was going to make an ogre army, and we were going to paint that, because we're insane. Yeah. And then on Monday, you're right. One of my friends is like, actually Dan Tatone, owner of Gamers Vault, the gaming store. He's like, I want to play fantasy. I'm like, okay, great. He goes, come over, we'll play a game. Come to the store, we'll play. No problem. I get there. Like, have you read the rules, Dan? Why? Okay, well, what does that mean?
8 or 9 years ago.
So I'm like, have you read 8th edition? Well, not 8th edition.
I'm just at 3rd edition. I'll get there.
Like, okay. Like, what was the last fantasy you played? He goes, I don't know. So it was like 7th or 6th? He goes, no, I think it was 5th.
Like, okay. Hero Hammer.
They're like, so that's not going to help at all. The other thing was, he's like, it's our first game, right? So I'm like, we'll play small. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking 1250. He goes, well, I can't really make an effective list for under 2,000 points. Like, that doesn't sound right. Like, I don't... The game scales. I don't understand what you mean, but whatever. Okay, so we'll play 2,000 points. And God bless him, it was the longest game of Warhammer Fantasy I played in years. Because he hadn't read the rule book. He read his army book, but of course didn't retain anything because he has no idea what things mean or how they're related. So he had like runes on guys. He didn't know what they did. And then like every turn it was like, oh wait, no, I've got this weapon. Oh no, wait, sorry, I swapped it for that weapon. Oh, wait, did you roll this? Because you should have taken a hit when this guy died because he had this on. Yeah, so it was a long, painful game. It was still fun, but it took a lot longer than it should have. And then the complete evening, I got a parking ticket, so that was...
perfect.
But I won the fantasy game.
Yeah, you stomped a noob. Yeah.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take my victories where I can get them. I'm not proud.
It's always tough to win a game when you're trying to show someone how to play the game.
Like, yeah.
I don't want to break your spirit because I want you to play, but...
Well, I did have 2 units of Skull Crushers, so I couldn't have been that concerned about him.
Yeah. Okay.
And a Demon Prince. And a Siege Lord on disc. But that's okay, because it was 3, a good learning experience for him.
3 up ward, plus reroll the ones. That one?
Maybe. But he stayed back and did nothing but support magic. He just sat there.
He was playing dwarves, so...
Yeah.
He has to be ready.
And the Demon Prince just kept charging units by himself, figuring he'll die, right? You can't throw a Demon Prince into anything and live. But he didn't die, so... But I tried to get him killed, damn it. That's what really matters. But no, it was a good game. It was a lot of fun. Dan got to see kind of what units did and how, like, things like strength. He didn't realize really how important strength was in this edition. Like, so there's a lot of things for benefits where you couldn't see, like, what the advantage of a great weapon was. He's like, yeah, but they're going to go last. I'm like, yeah, but your initiative's already two. Like, how much slower can you possibly get? You're already going to go after me. You might as well have that, you know, that extra two strength. Or he kept doing smaller units, because, of course, he'd played previous editions. So he's like, okay, well, I get a unit of, you know, 13 miners. Okay. Yeah. So they ambush you from behind. Except they don't come in from behind, they come in front of you, and they run into your unit of skull crushers. All right. That's not going to go how you think it's going to go.
Initiative 2. Should always try last.
Yeah, back last time you played, when you charged with Great Weapon, you strike first.
Yeah. That's it, right? So it was a lot of learning for him. And I think overall we had a good time. We'll play again. Looking forward to losing. Because I only ever win once. That's the way my army works. I beat Antoine once. Yeah. That was it. All those games we played, I think I've won once. And that's because we played half wrong for everything, because we were just starting to play again.
No, you won with your... you lost with your elves, but you won with the chaos.
I won the first game I ever played against you with my high elves, and then I lost like 7 in a row.
Yeah.
And then I won the first game of Warriors against you, and then we haven't played since.
Yeah.
But I know what's coming. True. I know what's coming, so I have to start a new army now so I can win again. That's the way it works. Anyway, so I guess that finishes up the hobby part of the show. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll do events, and then we'll go right into Fantasy Fest. Sound good?
Great.
Yep.
All right. Be back, geeks. And we're back with upcoming events. You know what? Looking at upcoming events, first on the list, Fantasy Fest. Guys, tell us about it.
Yeah, Fantasy Fest. What's that about? No, it's an event. We are on our 7th edition. 17th edition. Yeah, sorry. I forgot a 10. And we work really hard on it. It's a team play. It's you play a team 4 person, but we play 3 games 2 against 2. And it's and the point change every game. First game at
1500,
200 and 2500. So but 200, 2000. And it's a full day. We start at 8 in the morning. We finish playing at 10:30, something like that, and with the compilation, everything at 12 o'clock. At the midnight, we're going out and we're going back to our family. And after that, we wait another year to play again.
And then we sleep on the couch for the next 2 weeks. Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to get all the dirty details on that in a little bit. What else we got for upcoming events? Oh, yeah, the Meg Maples Masterclass. So that's December 6th and 7th at Gamers Vault. That's going to be covering all your advanced painting techniques. It's $205 US, payable to Meg Maples through PayPal. You can find out more details on the Arcane Paintworks Facebook or her blog. And the class is not filled up, but I think there's going to be about 15 of us so far. We can always take a few more. So if you're interested, sign up.
Next up, the Norton Defender ND Open 7, March 7 and 8. They have 3 tournaments, Fantasy, 40K, and War Machine. Fantasy has already sold out. You can still get your name on the reservation list. And they also have 2 qualifiers where the first place is a place in the event. One is in Quebec and the other is in Trois-Rivières. I think it might be this weekend, so it might be too late already. But the one in Quebec is still upcoming. It's $70, 2 days. You have boat lunch included, a bunch of prize. There's also the Norton Defender painting contest run by Mathieu Fontaine the same weekend at the same place. They have their own room. It's $15 to register for how many entries you want. That's about it. That's it for events.
Okay. So let's move into fan mail. We got Sarah's question of the week. Good old Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. what percentage time do you spend on painting or modeling versus actual gameplay? I'll start that one. I spend like 98.9% of my time doing modeling and painting, and practically no time gaming. That's not really my intention. It's kind of the way it works out, because it's easy to pick up a model anytime and start painting. Not so easy to schedule those 4-hour long games of whatever I'm playing that day. So sadly, the way it is for me. What about you, Antoine?
It's about the same. Before my son was born, it was easier to set game, but he's small. He's still young. It's harder to get out and with work and everything. So it's mostly hobby time at my place, except if we're running a league or something like that. Then I'm able to get a bunch of game in, but it must be planned. So most of my gaming is done at events, like we did at Gen Con or TempleCon, and the rest of the year, a game once in a while, but
we got old.
Hobbying all every night.
We got old, Antoine.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex?
I'm not a painter at heart. I paint because I feel bad. I'm guilted into painting because my friends have like nice armies, and it just looks better on the tabletop when both sides are painted and you're not fighting against ghosts or like dark figures because they're primed black. It goes in spurts. I have inspiration. So I'd say it's about half-half, because I too have like a family to take care of and hobby time is limited, but I make it a duty to myself to have one evening a week to do whatever I want to do, and I try at least once every 3 weeks to get a game in, preferably fantasy 40K. I love it. I'm just not that. If I have to split my gaming time into something, I'd rather play fantasy than 40K. So modeling I love, but the painting itself, it's a chore. It's just because guilt.
It works.
It's a valid reason.
Yeah.
It's about the same thing for me. I'm not a big painter. I've been playing since 1991, and I still get some figures that aren't painted. And just like Alex said, I've surrounded with people with great painting skill and interest. So it forces me to... And the events are organized, the Mega 40,000 for 40K and the Fantasy Fest for Fantasy. When it arrives, whoops, I have to put some painting to prepare my army. But outside of that, it's all playing. So it's the reverse of what you do. 90% playing and 10% hobbying.
There you go. All right, so I guess that's about it. So I guess we'll move into news.
Yep.
And I think instead of alternating back and forth, because I think the show's going to run long,
Yeah. Well,
we're just going to try to like plow through the news, stuff we find interesting. And again, like always, guys, this isn't a comprehensive list of all the news going on in the industry. It's just kind of stuff we thought was interesting. So first off, the Dead Meat Kickstarter went live on Halloween. They had kind of a slow start, but they're working on it. They've adjusted all their price points for everything to try to entice people to participate. So go on, take a look at that. It's quite affordable now for what you get. They have a big goal though, people, so they need our help. So let's try to make it happen, because Ryan is a good guy and it looks like it's going to be a good game. Aside from that, Heavy Gear got funded. They're doing some great stretch goals now. So congratulations to the guys at DreamPod 9. That seems to be going particularly well. Looking forward to seeing what the plastic models are going to look like after all these years, those little tiny metal guys. It'd be nice to have guys that actually stick together and don't fall apart every time I knock one over. What else did I see? New small-scale mats from Table War. So Table War has a product claim. It's called Fat Mats. So they're basically game mats to play on, and they have some stuff now coming out for small-scale miniatures like Drop Zone Commander or Heavy Gear, maybe even Epic if people are still playing Epic. God, I wish people were playing Epic. Cool game. Anyway. So I thought that was pretty neat. It's a niche product, but games are no fun to play without terrain, and there's not a lot of options for readily available, 6 to 10 millimeter terrain for sci-fi or anything. It doesn't exist. So,
especially not for the surface.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, buildings and stuff, but they're fine. But to try to find a table to play on that's the right scale is hard. I mean, Drop Zone Commander, Hawk War Games has that fantastic paper and papercraft kit they make where it's two posters you put down to make the city streets. And there's some papercraft buildings, which is a great value. I think it's like $40. It's amazing. But, you know, there's still just posters. And after, you know, five or six times of folding it up and putting it away and taking it out, those creases start tearing apart and you've got a bunch of sheets of paper you're trying to get to stick together. It doesn't work so well. And, you know, Games and Gears has a table coming out for, you know, for Hawk War Games, Drop Zone Commander, but that's been delayed. I think my Kickstarter's 8 months behind now or something, and Lord knows if it'll ever show up. So, you know, that's it's nice to see someone doing something for that scale.
And there's a great comment about the Fat Mats.
Oh, yeah, they've had a lot of really, really good feedback from people. People seem to really like them. And aside from that, I also saw Darksword launch a Kickstarter. Now, by the time I get this edited and out, there'll probably only be about 5 days left on the Kickstarter. But I encourage people to take a look at it because it's not the typical Dark Sword fantasy miniatures. They're really unique-looking, almost fey-looking, a lot of the stuff. So it kind of made me think, going back to Warhammer, Bretonnia, like Avalon-looking stuff, you know, unicorns and like elfish-looking ladies with animals accompanying them through the forest, a lot of diorama pieces, some interesting looking animals, cats and stuff, and some kind of forest spirit. I think it's playing like a harp or some sort of instrument. A lot of really interesting stuff, fantastic price points, and Darksword makes excellent miniatures. And that's it for me. Antoine, you got anything?
Yep. Tablescape is by Secret Open Miniatures are now available for order for everybody.
4x6 tables, yeah.
Yeah, the 4x6 tables in the four design?
Yeah, I think it's four designs.
Four designs.
Yeah.
So it's available for retail now. So the Kickstarter is already going out to backers.
Yeah, it's going out. Yours? Yeah, I got mine. So I can say, honestly, fantastic product. Amazing value. And this thing clips together so much better than anything GW ever made. It's amazing.
Not hard. The clip on the realm of battle was horrible.
Yeah, so it's actually really well put together, and the detail level is really good. So,
next, Zenith are raising two new Kansai's model. They are, I'll butcher those names, Daidarabuchi and Sheshokeseki. You probably are better in Japanese with all the translation you did, Paul.
I'm not even going to try. No? I don't want to embarrass myself. It's all good.
Okay, so it's the first one is a tree man looking or tree spirit looking model. It's really interesting. They have giant facial features, really large, but it's a different style from what we see like from Game Workshop, instead of all being like gaunt and scary looking. It's
very Japanese style, right? Yeah. Where if you look at any of their demon iconography and stuff, it's all like super long noses and very kind of exaggerated features,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And the second one is similar, but more of a rockman instead of a treeman. So they're really interesting. Both are probably on 50 millimeter square bases. So it's a good standing for other models for fantasy. And lastly, Privateer Press showed a bunch of new upcoming releases, but one that got my eyes are the North Kin Fire Eaters for the Trollblood. It's a squad of drunken fire breeders. So that's
not a good mix. Drunken and playing with fire. Nah.
Trollbloods,
they can regenerate. It's all good.
They can regenerate, okay. So it's not bad. So you have the three guys with their bottle of booze, all shambling and spewing fire. So the models are really, really cool. So it's one of the faction I play, and I'm really looking forward to those.
Those models actually do look really cool. I'm just seeing them now for the first time.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
And it's a combined unit. Instead of just being trollkins, there's two trollkin and one, not a whelp, I have a blank, a pygmy troll.
Yeah.
So,
interesting. One of the guys looks a lot like Borka, I find, eh?
Yeah, but they are, Borka well, is an orkin, so.
I mean, all the trolls look the same anyway.
They're they are kin of Borka. Anyway, so they do fit in the same aesthetic. And that's it for me. Etienne?
Yeah, but some small thing that I saw, there's a Kingdom of Death, the company with these, don't know if you know these miniature, bit twisted, very fantasy, and they have their own games that I don't know about, but I love their miniature. There's the new one that came out this week, the Visionaries. If I was a hobbyist, I said I wasn't one. I think I'd buy everything that they do. Good for diorama and things like that. So that's why I want to talk about it. And there's a thing, I don't know if you heard about it, End Times, from Game Workshop.
Glutton. May have heard one or two things about that.
They talked a lot about it, but I was... I wanted to see it because the Legion of Chaos, like I said, I started in 91, so everything was Legion of Chaos at that time. So that was curious to see how they play it now. So I'm very I want to read it as soon as possible.
All right, Alex, anything interesting in the market that you saw that...
I live under a rock, so
Well, you live on the South Shore of Montreal, right?
Yeah.
Rock quarry all the way.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Not much, except obviously I'm pretty excited about the new products that are going on with End Times. The Heavy Gear Kickstarter that you mentioned earlier, I've been in love with the Heavy Gear universe for years. I've played the role-playing games. The artwork in the original books was just awesome. Heavy Gear was founded by a friend of mine who sold his shares like a couple of years ago. So there's always an interest in what they're doing because they're based in Montreal. It's homegrown stuff. So all they do is really, really interesting. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go. Because, I remember those 3 inches high pewter heavy miniatures.
I had some till a couple of years ago. And I traded them to a Games Workshop staffer who was a sales rep at Games Workshop when Games Workshop still had a Canadian office. And he traded me a bunch of GW product for old RAFM or Ral Partha Heavy Gear lead figures. So I had a bunch of northern stuff, grizzlies and things.
Yeah.
If you never tried a game, it's a good time to get in.
Yeah, the new rule set is so much better than anything I've seen. Some
worked on. It's a lot better, a lot easier to get into. So.
Well, they took a rule set. I mean, I'm gonna off topic a little bit, but the original Heavy Gear rule set, right? It was a role playing game that had a miniature game built in that was designed to compete with BattleTech. Right, in BattleTech, I took a mech, you took a mech, and then we shot at each other for 45 minutes until one of us blew up. So Heavy Gear was kind of based on that, where I'd have one or two gears, and you'd have one or two gears, and we would shoot at each other, and it was ultra detailed. There was all kinds of different weapon options, and a blade of armor, and all kinds of math, and it was super fantastic. And then they tried to scale it up, and then all fell apart, right? It was a game of, if we're going to play a big game where it's like three squads against three squads, we're here for the next, 2 days.
I tried to finish a skirmish game, squads against squads, and it would just never end because there was so... always using six-sided dice to roll whatever you had to roll, and there were so many penalties. Minus one for this, minus one for that. So you never get the hit.
Unless you were standing still and they were out in the open also standing still. Yeah, it was tough.
It was ridiculous. So yes, it evolved with time and can't wait to see how that's going to turn out. But should be pretty interesting. It's always curious when we hear the comparison of, they wanted to compete with Bet Warrior because scale-wise, a Heavy Gear, the highest, the tallest Heavy Gear.
No.
5.1 meter, I think, or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Tops. So it had no scale in comparison to mechs, but still.
No, really interesting. But the style of game, right? Yeah. It was whole big robot versus smaller robot, but still a big robot by human standards.
The mechanic behind it also was super, super nice. V engines and all that.
The world. The world is... I mean, I
Terra Nova is just...
I was one of the original beta testers for the first edition RPG.
Yeah.
I was in a group with a guy named Tyler who ran the game. And it was really, really interesting. We'd get these packets of rules. And then we'd try to figure out how the game worked and try to break it, But DreamPod 9's always suffered from a couple problems. And one is not enough playtesting and not enough editing. So stuff would make it to market that... I mean, I think it was... The Gears of the North book I got that was actually filled with all Southern Gears. They'd gone to print and the cover got inverted.
Oh, nice.
They print rule book where it's like referencing rules that they forgot to put in the rule.
Yeah.
You know, see rules for grenades. There are no rules for grenades. Oh.
Yeah.
Oops. Yeah. Oops. Yeah.
Do your own.
Or a couple of years back, and again, I'm off topic, but I went and talked to Robert Dubois, who is the owner of the company now, and I'd gotten a rule book that was missing pages, and we're at TempleCon. And he's like, I really got into the game. I haven't played it in years. I'm back playing Blitz. I bought the rulebook, and it seems missing pages. Like, oh yeah. I'm like, okay. I've got like 4 pages in a row that are like dupes or something. He's like, yeah, we know about that. He's like, I fired the guy that did that. I'm like, okay. What do I do? He's like, well, you can download the pages on the website. Okay.
Yeah, he was never much. He was never much of a client service type of guy.
And he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
And he loves his product. He really loves the universe. It's good they've got Dave. It's good they've got Dave. I think it's going better now, and that's good. So enough of me bashing on a Canadian company and.
The only Quebec one?
It always comes back to that, right? It's like that article I wrote for you guys that we never published because I tried to make it sound good, and no matter what I did, it sounded like I was ragging on them.
Yeah.
Oh, well. I guess I'm not perfect after all. Alex, we were talking to you. You say heavy gear. Anything else you caught in the news?
Not from when I stuck my knuckle under my rock. That's about it.
All right. So I guess that'll take us right into Fantasy Fest.
Yep.
Hoo-wee. Okay.
Yeah. So you gave us a little about the event. Now tell us a little about the backstory. So, 17th event, 16 years.
Yeah, 16 year because we did. There's the year we did the two of them in the same year because there was a new edition of 40K. But we started approximately in 1997. It wasn't even our idea. It was a friend of ours, Jean-Marc. Who had this crazy idea to do one big game. It's some kind of apocalypse for fantasy before it existed. We had a friend who worked on Chabanel Street, where they have a lot of shop to cut the cloth and things like that. And it was a table with about, correct me if I'm wrong, 40 feet long and 5 feet wide.
Yeah.
And we were about 10 to 12 guys. And we put a curtain in the middle of the table. And everybody brought everything they've got. We have a side of order and disorder. We didn't call that at that time, but
good guys and bad guys.
Yeah, good guys and bad guys. And I don't remember the point we had, but we had a lot of points on the table. I think it took 3 hours only to make the deployment. And
that's my style of game. That's the type of game I like to play.
And after that, you took off the curtain, and you see against who you play. So that was a lot of fun. Yeah. After that, we start playing, and it was, I think, each half round was about 2 hours.
Oh, at least. Yeah. And that was in the early years, because that event grew in popularity. Atin and I, we could pride ourselves to say that we were part of a battle that was at least 100,000 points on each side. Yeah. At the height of that type of Fantasy Fest, where we had one big battle on a 50 or 40 foot table, we brought 100,000 points. Yeah.
We came
ridiculous.
We came in at 8 o'clock in the morning. We start playing at 12 o'clock after deployment, and we went out of the building at 7 o'clock and the next morning. We play for the first time. We play for 24 hours, and it wasn't expected. We just played, and when it's over, we'll go out. And when we played, and hey, it's time to for lunchtime. Ah, it's time. Oh, it's late. Wow, we'll finish it. And whoop, the sun is going up, and we're still there. So the first experience was a lot of fun. After that, in the boys club, there was some mixed up and. Difficulties and things like that. So Jean-Marc wasn't interested to do it again. So I picked it up and called everybody because there was not much of internet or email at that time.
No Facebook group.
So it was a telephone and things like that. And we did it a second time and a third time. And like Alex said, there was more and more people that were involved. Up until 1 year, an extremity of the table, there was a guy with 3,000 points of Wood Elf with 2 to 3 feet with his next partner. So he was very alone. And the other side of the table, there was 9,000 points, I think, of Skaven and Undead. So about 5 hours inside the game, where we play nearly 20 hours, the guy was dead. But he was from Shawinigan, and he was waiting for his buddy. So he spent the rest of the day sitting, watching everybody. So that's the time I said, no, okay, the big game is fun when you deploy, but after that, it can be getting very boring, like if your game doesn't go well. And so that's why the next year we started to play the tournament format a bit. We did that at Chabanel Street again. And by the start of the year, the 2000s, we have a lot of friends that go to Bicolin, some kind of LARP that is in Shawinigan. And they have an inn, a big inn. So we rent it for the weekend, and we played on Saturdays, and but we arrived on Friday, we played Saturday, and finish on Sunday. So it was a big weekend of play, non-stop tournament. The first one, we played 3 against 3 on the 2 tables. So it was 16 feet long and 4 feet wide, 3 against 3. So it was not very interesting.
Again, the issue we had with this and the last few years of our big table game was when people wanted to go refuse flank or stuff like that. You'd be stuck in front of nothing, or opposite, you'd be stuck in front of the rest of the players. So in an effort to balance everything out, we've started to modify. Well, actually, Etienne started to modify. I got implicated a couple of years ago. To change the format to make sure that everybody enjoys their game.
Yeah, and in the first years, even when we were at Bicolin Inns, we were very teamed. Order versus disorder, or things like that. There was one year we made a map, and every time you win, you can advance on the map to get somewhere. And but it got each year it got difficult to find a new way to. So it's starting just to. At 2008, I think, we started to get the actual format that is more tournament-based, but the tournament that that get everything of Game Workshop in it. So you have the gaming, you have the hobby, you have the scenery, because the table, everybody has to bring their own table, and there's the fair play. I believe a lot in it. I receive a lot of, how can I say it?
Praise?
No. That was exactly the contrary I was looking for.
Flack. A lot of flack?
Yeah, because a lot of people question it, but I believe in it. When I make the compilation and I receive a negative fair play notes for somebody, I often find who it was, and I understand the game, how it went. So it speaks. I believe in that, and I kept it in. But we, starting 2008, we did it only one day. That's the when we started to get, and everybody started to have babies and things like that. So one day was enough. And we started doing it in the region of Montreal. At first in Mercier. After that, in Pointe Saint-Charles, in a gymnasium. And since 2010, we do it at Le Plateau School in Parc La Fontaine. It just happened that I worked there, so it's easier to get the room. And it worked great. We had, less people playing in a couple of years ago, because everybody went in 40K. And it's a friend thing. It's a lot of our friends that come in. We don't promote it outside, but it started to get to people talked about it, and we start receiving people from outside. The 40K part started to get a lot of interest, and it made people speak about the fantasy part. So we get more and more people from the outside. And since I think you've got somebody listening, maybe we'll get some eventually. But it worked. I think it worked great, though. I've received a lot of praise. People have fun, but that's the most important for my part, though, is the fun people get. When the the comeback I receive is that, it's cool, everything is well oiled, everything's going well, and there's not a lot of, or they've even, I can't say, there's no power gamer necessarily. I say that, and maybe this year.
Yeah, this year with the gate open.
Yeah.
Gonna get rattled for that one.
That's about the storyline of the Fantasy Fest. It really started upon a trip, and it went on and on and on until we arrived in 2014 with the 17th edition.
Right, and I just want to mention again that, so you actually run two events, right? There's Fantasy Fest.
Yeah.
And then there's the 40K event, which is at the other end of the year. So you do one in the fall and one in the spring, I think?
Yeah, exactly. The first one, when we started, we did only the Fantasy one. Nobody in our group of friends played 40K. And after that, I started in my house to play some kind of big, that's before Apocalypse, to play 40K. And it grew up and it grew up. And some people stopped playing Fantasy to play 40K. So the what we call the Mega 40K is our big thing. We had a lot of people. And like I said, when people stopped playing Fantasy, then our Fantasy Fest went down a bit. But with the people coming from outside, but it's growing back. You see, in the place that we are actually, we have a limit of 40 person, so 10 team of 4 person. But for the Mega 40,000, we're starting to think to go outside in another building because the demand space is there.
Yeah.
But for Fantasy, we're still okay.
Well, because Fantasy, I'm trying to remember, how many teams did we have last year?
Last year, we had 8 teams.
8 teams. It seemed pretty healthy. I mean, last year, I just started playing Fantasy. It was the first event I'd ever been to, because I'm not a tournament player. I don't tend to like tournaments. I'm very picky who I play with, because my gaming time is so limited. I want to really make sure I enjoy it, right? And I'm more about theme and having fun than building when it all costs less. I mean, anyone can build a net list. That's not the point. The point is to have a couple beers, play a game, and have some fun.
Exactly.
So I really liked the event because I got to play with I had teammates, guys who I was friends with. So even though I wasn't very experienced in the game, I knew I had a partner with me that knew the rules. I would make sure I wasn't doing anything completely stupid. And even if I didn't enjoy my opponents, which I have to say I pretty much enjoyed everyone I played against at your event. At least I knew I'd have fun with. You're grinning over there. At least I knew I had fun with my teammate.
Yeah, but that's the idea. I believe a lot that when I play, even with friendly game, I like more teamed game than the alone game. Even if the alone game go faster than the team game, that never finish because we talk about everything. But that's why I play. That's why that's what interests me. And the one of the main reasons also that I still organize these events is to see the people. There's a lot of friends there that I don't see anymore outside of the event. So it's the weekend, the day, it's not the weekend anymore, it's the day that we all see each other, just like when we were 25 years old and to play for a day. Often I play and I run to, because I play, I organize and I play. I live with that, but I never win, so that's okay. But I play my game, I run to put in the stats and I go back. So often I don't have a lot of time to speak with the people, and we say, we have to take a lunch together, and we don't see each other up until the next edition. But that's my drive. That's what put me each year with and when I start working on it and said, it's the last year, I do it again. And that's what my drive is, the people, the friends. So that's why for me it's important that it's friendly, it's fun, we get food, the lunch and the supper, everything's there on time, and we have to run the event cleanly.
Yeah, and it's very well organized, I have to say. It was super smooth last year, and I really like the idea that you bring your own table. So it saves a lot of headaches for you guys, and it's cool for us because we get to bring our own terrain, do stuff, and try to win a prize with the table we bring.
That's exactly it. That's part of our gaming community. Is we try to make it very communal, right? Because we know we live in a province where someone will take care of it, someone will take care of it. Well, here you have to take care of it. So you bring your own table, right? You can be proud of what you bring on and show to everyone. There's a prize attached to that as well for the best table. Same thing, it's a team effort. You're four players in a team, and for every game, you're going to switch partners. So yep. you're going to play with every member of your team, and all the other teams are going to do the same. So you get to see a lot of people. You get to mix with a lot of people, see different play styles. So that's really interesting as well. Our tournament is really, really not a hard boys kind of tournament. Some odd guy will make up our list, and it might not be that successful. It happens. A lot of people play for it.
And I think what happens, generally speaking, in an event like yours where it's more casual, is that one guy that brings the power list ends up feeling awfully out of place. He doesn't end up enjoying himself because he knows he's that guy. Yeah. And no one wants to be that guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
So
yeah, it happened that two Mega 40Ks ago, there was a team that do competition and things like that, tournaments, and they came for the first time with a hard list. And the guy said after that, next year we know how to play. And they came the next year with a smoother list. They were still competitive, but they saw how the people. So instead of using this to their advantage, they adapted to the people that they were playing against. And it made me proud. It made me proud to see that, I'm some kind of a right track of something. You know?
Points wise for Fantasy Fest, we try as well. The rules change from year to year. Sometimes we try to do some escalation lists. Some other years we won't. We'll try something else. And in stats wise, where your team finishes is not only victories or how you smashed your adversary. Is army presentation
for a lot of soft scores. Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How was your table for your team, et cetera, et cetera. How was your generalship? How was sportsmanship? All that makes that. If you trashed all of your opponents three games in a row, you might not win the Fantasy Fest because maybe your armies aren't painted as well as others. Maybe you're just an awful player to play against, right? So all of these make it really an interesting concept because you have to put some effort in all four aspects of the game. And again, since we try to make it communal, the doors are open to outside players. Antoine came, Paul, you came as well. But given the space limitation we have, we just can't go and promote it everywhere. If ever it happens, then we'll think about it. But so far, you know, the power of fantasy waxes and wanes, and you know, the number of players as well. So
I really believe in the concept of bring a friend. You keep your essence in that kind of thing. When you promote it, you receive a lot of people, and you can get mixed up with your idea. And to finish what Alex said with the points, it's easy. It's 100 points. 25% is the winning you'll do on the table. 25% is the painting of your army with a judge and part of the public vote. 25% is the table you'll bring, and 25% is the sportsmanship that your adversary will give you. So it's like Alex said, often the team that trashed everyone at the table is not necessarily the winner. Last year, the team that won were very surprised that they won. They didn't expect it. But when
I remember that.
when you compile everything, and when it happened with the face that they made, I said, "Oh, I mixed up." And I went back and I counted. And, oh, it's okay. Everything. So it was very funny. And that team, for the little story, there's a lot of guy there when in the first year that we started that had some problem with their sportsmanship, a lot of negative reaction when they lost and things like that. And one of the reasons that they won this year, maybe 12 years after, it's of their sportsmanship. Like, everybody loved to play with them. The guy matured, and we all grow older and softer, and that was fun to see them win also.
Yeah, quite interesting in that matter that you see people or their gaming habits evolve, because you know, 16th year we do this. Half of the guys there have been there for at least 5, 6, or 7 years. So we see the influence like other players have on you. It's always weird, you know. You complain, and then you see that across the table, all these guys are enjoying themselves. You know, they're not even it's not because they're tabling you. It's just that they're enjoying themselves. So, oh yeah, you know, I can play that way. It can work.
I can have fun too. I'm allowed.
Yeah. So
people tend to forget. They really do. It's strange.
Yeah. When you get stuck in that spiral, like, my game's not going well. I'm having a shitty day. What is this? And you know, just looking across the table and say, you know what? Relax. These are just plastic miniatures.
I'm playing with toy soldiers. I'm a grown man. I'm still allowed to do this. I must be doing something right.
Yeah, some way you don't have to look at it. So just, that's sometimes.
So in order, obviously, to make everything fit in a day, the schedule is tight. But Etienne runs a well-oiled machine. Food arrives on time. Supper, lunch is provided in the entry fee. When you pay to subscribe or to register, actually.
Yeah, and super reasonably priced, I think. If I'm not mistaken, it's $40 a person.
Yeah, so it's $160 for a team, 44%. And there's a reason we say $160 and not $40, because everything is to make a team. So if you say, we're three and I'll play for two. No, you pay for $460 to play for a team.
Yeah.
And that's the part where we're starting to professionalize ourselves. the term is good, because like I said before, it was for friends and it was okay, and pay me when you arrive. But 2 years ago, there was one team
that a team and a half
that, but the food was all reserved, and we were expecting it, and we had to pay.
They didn't show up, or
yeah. No, they didn't.
A team and a half didn't show up. Oh. Yeah. So that cuts a big hole in the budget when you're non-profit tournament.
No.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Exactly. And we didn't keep a little bit. Everything that people pay, it's going back. We pay the room, the food, everything, and the rest is price support and things like that. So when there was a team that didn't show themselves, we paid from our pocket. So that's why we started to pay... before. And it's not easy, and especially this year, the team, there's a lot of teams. We're four guys and we're going, okay, pay, and it will be official. So right now there's only three teams that are officially in, because they're the one that paid, and I know about five other teams that are already organized, but I'm waiting for the payment, and that's the part where I have to be more more business, and that's not my style. People know me that I'm not a businessman, but if you want to keep doing it, we have to be a bit harder on that.
Yeah, it only makes sense. The other thing is, I think this year you announced it fairly early, but then there was a kind of a long period where we didn't hear much about it.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, like, it's okay. Here's the event that's posted. The pack is posted, and there's 4 weeks left. So get on it, guys.
I changed job this year. So that's why I know nobody wants to know my life, but I go to go to university 2 nights. I've got 2 children, and I changed job. So it made a drop on the time available, and that's why last time we met with Alex, said, okay, now we're putting it out. We have to, and Alex worked a lot on the scenarios. He's the one doing it, and each year we have to try to new one. The first year with the edition, we always take the one that are in the book. But after 2 years, man, we have to prepare our own scenario, and that's the part where Alex gets in. So we have to find something with all the document he have and all the old things he has. So that's his part.
It's interesting enough to get everyone to play Warhammer together, playing the same old 6 scenarios that are in the rule book. Some people get tired. Some people don't like the scenarios. And you want to make something original. You want to make some form of innovations. Oh, yeah. So you have to find constant new ways to make it simple and interesting in its originality. So, yeah, it can be, at some times it can be, you know, head crushing. How can I make this, or how can I renew this scenario to make it interesting.
Yeah, so freshen it up a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Make it different.
So we try, and we always have, after the event, we always welcome all the comments on our forum, because we want to hear from the guys who were there, right? ultimately, it's not because you complain on a forum that I'm going to change. But if everybody complains about it, then we're going, we might want to revisit that. We live in a democracy. People might not be, you know, satisfied with the decisions we make. But at one point, we can't please everyone, right? So same thing goes for scenario or rule sets that we impose. This year, I know for a fact that allowing end times at the Fantasy Fest is going to create some waves because it's still pretty new. Not everyone's going to dish out the $100 per book to get to know what's in end times. And we're going to hear about it. You mentioned flack earlier.
Yeah.
We're going to get some flack comes November 30th for sure. But you know what? We're big boys. We're going to assume that and see how that goes.
I don't know how much flack you'll get because any of the Adepticon's allowing it, right? WAPACA, the States, has said they're allowing it. Like, a lot of the big tournaments are doing it. So, I mean, I think people who follow Warhammer Fantasy won't be surprised that you're allowing it, especially since it's a more casual event.
Mm-hmm.
It actually fits better with your event than it does with the U.S. Masters or the...
Yeah, but I think it's a timing. It's the timing is very short, so...
Yeah.
I think when we choose to put it on, it's okay. But before that, it was very the timing that was make me hesitate about bringing it in. We said maybe next year people will get to it. But when the FAQ went out with the rules of end times in it, so that was our final decision. I said, okay.
It's in the FAQ now. Yeah.
It's a bit official. So
time to man up.
Yeah, exactly.
So are you allowing everything from end times, so the new percentage for the characters, the new lore of undead, but also the two legion list, the Chaos Legion and Undead Legions are in for the tournament?
We're going...
Or for the event?
Yeah, we're going with the end times rules.
Full. So characters too?
Yep.
Okay.
So, yeah, and remember, so Nagash book and Glotkin book are in there.
Yeah, though Glotkin just came out and we're a month before the event, we're going to go, you know what? Let's go about it. I'm not afraid about the named characters because we have rule sets in the Fantasy Fest that you cannot have lord level character special named characters before a certain point in a tournament. Yeah. So that's going to help control the fact in a 2500 point game, if you want to put the Nagash, well, fine, go ahead, because in front of you there's going to be 5, 6, 7 cannons that can deal that. Right. Same for the Maggot Lords or even Glotkin or Karl Friend's Ascendant. Gosh.
He's the most, you know, people, Nagash. Yeah, that's not what I'm afraid of. It's those damn lightning bolts from Karl Friend's.
It's Karl Friend's.
Yeah, D3 plus himself. 1 wound, no save.
The Galmaraz.
Wound automatically. You know what?
Hey, you know, that means you could have 2 Galmarazes in 1 army now, right? Throw Vulton in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's going to be ways to deal with that, so I'm not too afraid of that. I just haven't seen or heard enough on the net of the new combos because you can get that extra percentage on lords and hero levels. You know, those limitations, people were always, if I only had 50 or 30 points more, I could do that combo with that lord and that hero.
And now they can.
So I'm really not anxious, but curious to see how that is going to play out on the field, on the battlefield. As a high elf player, I was always dreading, I love my dragon mage, but if I have that, I can have a battle standard bearer. Now I can.
Yeah.
How is that going to affect the game, right?
And the thing is, I think in a casual event, or a more casual event, you're not going to have, hopefully, anyway, anyone trying to break the game. It'll be more fun choices and just interesting stuff.
No, I'm pretty sure. Game breaking combos. I don't think we've seen. Actually, not true. A couple of years ago, when we were in our first years of doing a 4-man team and 2 against 2, I remember partnering up with one of my teammates, and just for the hell of it, we said, you know what. How about we go 4 dragons, 2,500 points each. You put 2 dragons, I'll put 2 dragons, and we'll see. If there's a gun line in front of us, or if there's a war machine list in front of us, we're screwed. But if not, it's going to be fun. Oh yeah, that break the game. That totally, totally broke the game.
Like, yeah, I wasn't there that year, and I heard about it.
So, yeah, you know, throw me the first stone because I did it one time, but it might happen. We'll see.
Well, it's for fun. It was game breaking, and yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying. It's game breaking, but it's still something completely over the top and fun. Like if I got stomped by a four dragon list in a team event, I'd probably laugh just because it's not something you're ever going to see again, and it's the perfect event for it, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
We really went out of our way. We even had a Sarnail, mercenary special character in there just to make sure we had all the dragons.
I've got him painted as a high elf somewhere. So
anyway, so yeah, for this upcoming event, our 17th edition of Fantasy Fest, we'll see how end time goes. There's going to be lots of questions for sure because not a lot of people have played the end time rules. Especially the Legions of Undead, not that they don't have that, my lord is dead, so everything crumbles and stuff like that.
Yeah, Tomb King's marching.
Yeah, it's going to take a bit of adjustment as the, I don't know, unofficial rules master of the tournament. I need to brush up on my end times as well. but, you know, it's all part of the challenge. You know, Etienne plays and compiles the stats. Well, while I play, I have like 6, 7, or 8 players asking me, hey, Alex, this, hey, Alex, that, can you check this? Come and see my situation. Yeah, but I'm gaming. We'll see. End times is going to be something. But yeah, we made the conscious decision of going all out with it.
We assume, yeah.
Exactly.
Stepping up. So you take the good with the bad, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. But like I said also, we really read what people put on the forum or on Facebook of the event when we do the next one. So if people don't like it, but I just have to say it, and we'll take it in consideration the next year. So
yeah. Well, it's good that you're open-minded like that too, right?
You got to voice your opinion.
The event grows with the people who are playing.
Oh, yeah.
As the group changes and the meta changes and whatever, the event evolves.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And I always think when you're a leader of something, it's a responsibility. It's not a privilege. So if I'm an organizer, I have to bring something interesting for the people that come and play. So it's the minimum I have to do.
Okay.
Hopefully things will go fine.
Oh, yeah. It's always go.
I'll put your question on the fact, by the way. I saw that.
Oh, on that's fine. You already answered it here. So. Yeah.
And if ever people want to look at it, we're not really big on the outside, but we officially, the group that organized everything is called Crève-Montsal. Die, you bastard, in English.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a funny name that we thought about it long years ago, and now it's out there, and you think, well, maybe I had to think about it next time. Yeah. No, we assume our Crève-Montsal.
In your next life, you gotta name your fantasy group something else.
Something else. But and we're on Facebook at Crève-Montsal, and we have a board where people come and chat with us or ask questions and things like that. I don't know the address.
wfbattle.proboards.com.
Yeah.
Okay, so that'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put it there.
But... along with a link to the Facebook group.
Yeah.
It'll also be on our Facebook as well. Yeah. Link into it.
And that's where we put our all the documentation about the events.
Great. Okay.
And the event is on November 29th.
Yeah, exactly. The door open at 8 o'clock, I think.
From 8 a.m. until everyone's dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. For teams who register, I think there's also a possibility to come and drop your table by.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On the Friday night, I think between 7 and 8.
Yeah, exactly. We prepare the tables and everything, so the people that want to bring their things the night before can do it. I'll be there. If not, Ben, just arrive because the schedule is very tight. Everybody wants to talk with everybody. Oh, how are you? Okay, go prepare yourself. Go.
Yeah, I remember because last year we did it in the morning. I think we showed up a bit early.
Yeah.
Because the doors open at 7, right?
Yeah.
So I think we were there.
We were there at 7 and it went fine. But
because we knew exactly where everything was. We ran in. We didn't talk to anyone. We just kind of made it.
All right. The first game started at 10. And 10 to 12, I think, and after that, there's a lot of years behind that. We know that often the people don't finish their game, like every tournament, but they do a large part of it. And it's often the first game that they don't finish more than the later one, because I think, again, they have to talk with everybody. And
I think last year we finished every game except for the my last game, where at the end I was like, please make it over.
Just my knee hurts. My misery.
It was also one of those things where the team I was playing against, really cool guys, one of them had been, I think both of them had been playing for like, we're on 8th edition, so like 6 editions, and all the rules were kind of all mixed in their heads. So there was stuff going on, and I'm like, you can't do that. Yeah, I can. Okay. I don't care. You know, I hit you with my Star Lance. I charge to hit you with my Star Lance. Okay. And then I switched to my Ogre Blade.
Come again?
I'm like, you can't do that. Oh, yeah, I can. Okay, sure. You know, I'm too tired. I don't care.
And you had played what? 3 game before the event?
So, yeah, the game 3 of the event was my 6th game ever, and I was correcting them on rules.
Yeah.
It was a bad sign.
Well, maybe it wasn't an Ogre Blade. Maybe it was just a great weapon for the same effect.
With his always strike first? Because he was high elves, and going always strike first, rerolls, and...
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to defend that.
it was funny, and my partner, because our original partner, Yom, had to drop...
So we played with Patrick.
Pelaquet?
Dwarf player?
Pelaquet?
Yeah,
yeah. All I remember is he's in politics. And was it Sorel or something?
Yeah, yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, yeah. So good memory. And I thought he was going to jump the table at this guy at one point. It was funny. He was more entertaining to watch than the game was to play. Because he was super chill the whole game. And then, like, by turn 4, like, the steam was coming out his ears. He was done. Anyway, but even with that, it was still a great day. And really looking forward to the event this year. It's unfortunate I can't make it. Antoine may be able to sneak in there. Our team fell apart. We drafted people to do it. And then at the last minute,
I can't go. We had a team planned this last year. The 4 of us.
I painted a whole army for this event.
Yeah. And each month, for the last 3 months, we're losing player each month. No.
Paul, get a babysitter.
It's tough to get a babysitter for a 12 or 14 hour day on a 9-month old baby.
Trust me, I know.
If I could trank her and bring her with me.
Hey.
Yeah, it's a good thing my wife doesn't listen to the show.
Benadryl will do that to your kids.
Oh, she's waking up. Give her some more.
No, for sure, parent. We'll miss you, but there's going to be another one the year after. So.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Now I can just paint another army for next year. It's all good. It's a good way to motivate myself to get stuff painted.
Yeah, yeah, events are good for that. Painting, they make you finish armies or rush through. But
especially when we implement rules. Well, this year, at the Fantasy Fest, the 3 levels of the game. So the 1,500, 2,000, and 2,500 points, you have to have a fully painted army.
That's the first year.
Unless it's your first year, right?
And then you always get the rookie pass by type of thing. But in order to push the people of the community to get their armies painted, we push that rule from year to year.
Yeah, it's been three to 4 years that we did that. The first year was only for the first round, and it made a difference, really. And I think people like it.
That's definitely more fun to play against.
Yeah, they finally have their own army paint, and they play against painted army. And before that, we had a lot of gray army, gray plastic gray or pewter gray, or even lead gray. Yeah. I have 5 generation of blood letter in my. I've been playing for too long.
Yeah, I had the fun of trying to figure out how to make blood letters rank up, the new plastic ones.
Yeah, the new plastic, they're good looking, but they're not...
They're interesting. There's some guys that got, swords going between the legs, the guy in front of them, over their head, around the shoulder, anything.
I play them only in 40k, so I don't have any problem with
that. Now, on the round basis, it's a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly.
2 inches, no problem.
Yeah.
Sure. Swing that sword.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. All right, so why don't we take a quick break? We'll come back and do our little fantasy 9th edition wish listing, and then we'll call it a night. So we'll be right back, dudes.
était peu catholique. On disait même qu'il était Jamaïque, le yuppie ça clique. Un jour se marie pour la première fois.
And we're back. Okay, so now we're going to talk about some 9th edition fantasy wishlisting. You know what? I'm going to let the guest take this. We'll start with Itzin.
Yeah. Oops. It's my turn.
You're on the spot. Put down the beer and start talking. Yeah. There we go.
No, I think I like him. I talked about End of Times, and I hope it will stick, and I hope it will make the move the storyline further. Maybe it's something from 40K, but I like it when it's gloom and doom, and the chaos is coming into the Empire, striking everything. I like it, though. It's a bit of a panic, and so I hope it will stay, and I hope it will build up where 9th edition is going.
So the fall of the capital of the Empire is a bit of a panic?
A bit. I play with elves, so they don't care about that. Well,
of course not. They disappeared, right? Like, we're going on a picnic.
They're burning everything, so I don't care about them.
Get the marshmallows.
Yeah.
I agree with you. It's a really fun thing that they moved the stuff forward. It's a bit like they did with Storm of Chaos. But,
and we know what happened there, right?
A revamp of Storm of Chaos.
You mean the storm that did not happen?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah. Don't know what happened there at Storm of Chaos, because they had something, but it was a world campaign. Maybe they didn't expect to go at...
They didn't like player-generated result, probably, and they wanted to...
They did just forget it, nothing happened.
They left it as a stalemate, right? And obviously, when you looked at the website with the world results...
It wasn't the case.
It wasn't the case at all. You know, Archaon, if I remember correctly, was shown back to his mom.
He was trashed down. I think they wanted to save Archaon. Like, they liked him, so... Well,
they still had him lose, right? Because then they added those White Dwarf kind of finishing up the campaign story articles, where Archaon, you know, gets his ass handed to him by the Orc Warlord, who shows up and is like, you know, Orc's his best, headbutts him and leaves. And then Valton's like, oh, I'm dying, so I'm going to go back to the city. And they're like, oh, he gets assassinated in his sleep. End of story. What?
clap.
It's like, clap. What happened? Like, the writer's kid came in, you know, day off school, wrote the rest of the story, published it. That was,
No, they missed it on that one. So, hope it will stick, and it will be inside the... It will be the base for the 9th edition. Another thing I like is... I expect... It's some more mix and match of the army. I know there is the Chaos Legion. There's some talk about the elves getting together. I go back when I play, but in the first edition, I think I started at second or third edition. You can took some different thing from different army. That's the thing that I find interesting. If you don't power game with it, there is no possibility to power game with it, just for the fluff, the interesting thing that you can do. That's another thing. I think I heard about, and I didn't go to True Glutkin to see if how much is there, but it's Summoning of Demons. I like my base of fantasy. It's chaos. I like chaos. That's why they call me the Chaos Organizer, the name that Alex gave me. So the Summoning of Demon, it's interesting. Maybe not like they summon undead, but with portals or things like that, or something we can play again with it. So don't know how they could do it, but the thing I hope for. And the biggest thing I hope is to make skirmishing fun again. Like, again, I play Beastmen with Elves, so skirmishing was a big part of my game. So when they took that out, I found them a bit boring. The new edition of the Wood Elf is interesting. I expect something for the Beastmen eventually. But skirmishing was fun, on my view of things. But I hope they'll work it out, because right now, skirmishing doesn't bring much to the table.
And they even aren't the Dryads based troops now?
They're ranking up now.
Yeah.
They don't have command models, and they rank up.
So,
I don't expect much, I miss the old raider rules of the Beastmen also. It's kind of some kind of semi-skirmishing where you can get a couple of rank and you can match gores and non-gores. It was really complicated, so that I understand why they took it off, but it was original. It brought something to the table, and when you take that out, it looked like another army. They put some monster in the last book of the Beastmen so that they won't be brown orc, but the monster are not interesting to play. They cost too much and they're too fragile. So skirmishing was on my part an interesting of the game that they took out with the last edition. So maybe 9th edition could be. So these are the things that I hope for.
What would you like to come back from skirmishing? The line of sight, maybe?
Everything. Or? The line of sight, the movement that it brought you. The line of sight was interesting because you can go backward, forward. And I like guerrilla war, so that was a main part of the guerrilla war.
Well, really gave them that hit and run feel, right?
Yeah, exactly. So so that's why it was interesting, moving through forests and things like that. You can still do it, but like I said, the new format of the skirmisher is more or less like
an actual unit,
exactly. So you've got all the negative part of the unit, but
benefits.
For no steadfast.
Yeah.
Except if you're in a wood.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
If you're in a wood, you're always that. Actually, you're stubborn in a wood, not even steadfast. You're better than that. You're stubborn when you're in a wood and skirmisher. Well, who wants to go and fight skirmishers in a wood? That's another story. But
You play high elf and you put the forest in the middle of the table.
What else?
It can work.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can do that with high elves as well if you have an interest in playing Shadow Warriors, but then who does?
Yeah.
A whole other topic. Yeah. I understand. All right. Episode 225. We'll go at that.
So that's about it for me.
Okay, Alex, what about you?
I've been at Warhammer since I think 4th or 3rd edition.
I started in 1992 and it was 4th, so it's probably around that the same time. Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of stuff come and go. Percentages, I'm hoping we can unlock units with named characters or specially themed armies. It's always
give a benefit to the themed armies, like
exactly. I'm a lover of Warhammer's history, Warhammer's fluff, and it always seems odd to have your core of this or that when you try to theme an army. So if you could switch armies around, there were alternative lists in army books of 6th edition, actually. So I'd like that form to come back.
Was that the edition where you had like the Teutogen Knights at the back of the Empire book? Like the Ulrich army?
No, that was during the Storm of Chaos.
That was Storm of Chaos, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The Dark Elf had a Raider list.
Exactly.
In their book.
The Empire had the Emperor's army. They had a flagellant or like a Sigmarite army. They were like half a page or a page and a half of alternative lists to your army book, so you could get a better feel, another theme to your army. I'd like that to come back to make it again more narrative, more interesting. If you're into, I don't know, Crumb the Conqueror, right? Make a Crumb list somewhere or something like that. Or if
I don't know, a Mootland army.
Exactly. Well, that'll never come back. But yeah, that's my sorrow. That's my if I don't know elves wise. If you really you're into that glade or that type of realm, that would bring a lot of flavor with simple rules. You know, they've been going on at it with different rules, this, that. Everybody is special in some way.
Kind of like how 40K characters unlock troop choices, right? Certain things become troops when you take certain special characters.
That would be an option, or just...
Or Team Force, like, you don't play War Machine.
No, I've heard about it, but...
Yeah, Team Force, each Warlocks or Warcaster, they have alternate teams,
mm-hmm.
and they restrict the choice you can take in your army, and you have tiers. So in tier one, you only respect the basic stuff.
Yeah.
And you get a small benefit. In tier two, you must use some specific choice, and it gives you other abilities. So the more you restrict your army choice, the more benefit you have. But it makes thematic list that you can play with into the fluff with.
Really, that's a wish list, or it's a wet dream from a guy who's been playing for way too long. But I'd like to see that come back as play wise. It's not really the edition itself; it's just the support that I wish for. You know, an evolving FAQ.
A FAQ at all? How many books don't have any FAQs?
That's because there's nothing unclear in them.
Oh yeah, yes, that's sure. The Dark Elf has nothing unclear.
Yeah. That's right. It's clear that they win. That's all that really matters.
I understand that they have some way of calculating, and they say never compare an army to another. But at one point, some things are just ridiculous. So, you know, I'm hoping there's going to be more than what one head thinking about this when they do 9th edition. Those really come back wish listing. That's about it. Because I know you guys are going to talk about a lot more stuff, so I think we're going to cover everything.
Okay, Anton, why don't you go?
Okay, I don't have much. Like Alex mentioned, he likes. I don't know if that might have been off air, but all the movement part and the how it's important that it's a game about movement, not just dice and combat, getting your unit at the right place. So I like the terrain rules from the previous edition, 6 and 7. They had more impact on the game. Right now, terrain has some use, especially if you use the special features, but it's less there. Like forest, if you don't use the special rules for them, it's like a big piece of light cover. That's it.
Gives you cover. I understand what you mean.
There's other stuff.
Yeah. It doesn't have enough impact, right? Yeah. It's a bloody forest in the middle of the table.
But before it was too restrictive.
Yeah.
Before
there has to be a compromise somewhere.
Heavy forest, right? You can't march and your quarter move.
Yeah.
You remember those days?
Yeah.
So I don't think they found the right balance. But I do think
it was too much before, and it's not enough right now. I think same thing for with rivers right now are really hard, but some people just don't use them because of that. But it was even worse before. So I think they need to put more, but I fear that they will do like they did with 40K and do building or terrain specific rules and only put that in the game.
That's a fear I have. Yeah, I expect that a lot. They're a business company, so
They want to sell their Citadel woods.
Yeah,
exactly.
You must use a Citadel wood. Place a Citadel wood.
Yeah, so you might no longer have building. You might have the Citadel manor.
Well, we've already started seeing it, Antoine. If you look at the End Times books, right?
Yeah, that's true. Specialized rules. You have rules
for the four different versions of the Garden of Mor, right? The Haunted Garden of Mor, the Mor Garden of Mor.
So
we're going to see that.
I expect more from the terrain and...
You're scared of it.
I'm scared that it will be even less, so we'll see. Apart from that, I'm really not a fan of True Line of Sight, and the new terrain rules just makes no sense. A forest, if you want it playable, you don't put that many for trees on your stem, but then you see true, so it doesn't block line of sight. So I don't like that. So I don't know how they could change it, because they don't have unit size, so it might be you can see monstrous infantry over infantry, you can see monstrous cavalry over cavalry, something like that. I don't know. I like the rule they had before, right?
They could do that, and that wouldn't slow down the game.
Yeah, like before, you could see you always large target over anything else, but they could do like a scaling for that, like infantry, cavalry, monstrous infantry, monstrous cavalry, something like that, like grading for stuff that can see over, maybe, instead of true line of sight, which you can see through everything right now, except building, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and it's funny to use true line of sight when you have stuff that does not move on the table, right? So it's I think it's counterintuitive where you play with immobile miniatures, fixed stuff that is supposed to portray or, you know, depict a part of reality. Everywhere in the fluff they tell you, and in the rules they tell you, oh, you know, close combat is a mix of, and a swirl of swords and here and there, but for rules purposes, we're going to keep your two units, you know, close by together. What fell through when you said
about...
Is when you mentioned True Line of Sight.
Everything except Line of Sight doesn't make sense. So I really don't like that. And there's probably other stuff I would mention, but most of you and Etienne already picked most of them, so I'll let you go with your list.
Okay.
And maybe add after.
So yeah, I got a few things. One is, I really like what End Times did with the new unified profiles for like the characters on monstrous creatures and stuff. And I want to see more of that, because I think part of what made fantasy fantasy was the dragons on the table and the giants and the big stuff. And now we just don't see it, right? You know, giants is for another reason, but there's just, you won't see, you know, old Carl Franz on the table, because it's just a point sink that's going to get blown off in turn two and then, or turn one even, and that's the end of it, right? The unified profiles gives the models survivability that they just didn't have. So I really hope that becomes the adopted standard for the future edition. Aside from that, let's see what else we got here. Magic. You know, I like magic. Again, an integral part of the game. It wouldn't be fantasy without it. But right now, there's just some spells that are so good, they can be game-changing. So being a good general isn't enough when your unit gets deleted because of a lucky, you know, purple sun or something, right? I think magic should be more supportive. You know, leave the sniping spells in or something. Okay, that's fine. But the big giant template unit deleting, I run around the table until it's dispelled or until it, you know, whatever, you roll a misfire or whatever.
And it easily kill a unit.
Yeah.
I think the notion of removed from play is in your sense, is too much.
Yeah.
You should have a ward save, something, whether or not, you know, a magic hits you. It should not be you're removed from play.
Most of the new vortexes let you have a save now. So
final transmutation in the metal lore.
Yeah. But that's all the spell from the basic lores still have that problem. But all the newer armies like Chaos, which had the Dzinsh big spell, which could remove units before. They changed that. No, it's no longer there.
Yeah.
The Dark Elf have a big template, and it allows save instead. It doesn't works the same as Pit of Shade, but you have a save instead. So I think they're going already in that route.
Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping, right? Because I think magic should be more of a support thing and add flavor and, you know, story to the game, not wreck the game or win the game for you. As much fun as I love having my units, you know, Dread 13th into Oblivion, you know, as cinematic and as fun as that can be, when it happens every single game, because that's like the one-trick pony.
Exactly.
And Leonard, if you're listening to this, yes, I'm talking about you, but I'll still play you anyway. Cannons. Cannons are the other thing. So we're talking about, you know, saying giants, you know, and monstrous creatures getting deleted. Cannons right now are just too good. They're like a 1+ choice, right? We're talking like, you know, this unified chaos list. What are we going to see? We're going to see Warriors of Chaos with 2 skull cannons. That's what's going to happen, because it's the auto include, right? They're just too good.
A big part of that is the new line attacks.
Yeah.
It both rider and mounts. That's one of the main reasons we don't really see characters on Monster now, on Ridden Monster.
Absolutely.
So, maybe, I don't know if randomizing like before would be a good thing, but maybe having the character maybe be able to get protected from his mount and only the mount take the shot, something like that,
would
make more sense.
Do you think adjusting the price of cannons has done anything? Because Empire cannons went up.
By 20 points?
Yeah, big deal.
Dwarven cannons went, but still, at one point they're in your special choices and, you know, and there's a lot of competition there. Has it made a difference in your games?
I don't think so. I mean, the game sizes are always increasing, right?
Yeah, like, and the rest of the troops went down anyway.
So a lot of stuff...
Well, but parts of the... Yeah.
Even if everything went up, it all went up kind of proportionally, and generally speaking, the game sizes have gone up proportionally too over the years. So I don't think cannons necessarily cost more now than they did before. It's just all, like, shifted up. The scale just shifts, right? I mean, I haven't been playing that long, so I'm kind of talking out of my ass, but from what I've read and kind of the what I get from people who have been playing a long time.
I think a big problem with the cannons now is how many armies have access to them. Before, it was only dwarves and empire. But now, more and more armies can get them. The ogres can... demons add them. Now, Aldicius can
use them. Beastmen, warriors have them.
Yeah, so they're everywhere. So might be a
problem. We're just problem. Seeing a lot more war machines, right?
Yeah.
Vampire counts now have access to the Casket of Souls and the Screaming Skull Catapults. There's just a lot more war machines rolling around now out there.
That's a scary thought. I just realized that.
Yeah. See, even the newbies can bring stuff to the table once in a while that the
you veterans... guys always do. New eyes on a given set.
Yeah. So I think that the prevalence of war machines, you know, and but the big problematic war machine, I think, is still the cannon.
Yeah. But I think it's needed because of some of the new big stuff, too. Especially with the end times, like Nagash or Car Friends Ascended. Most other shooting won't be able to really dent them compared to the cannon.
Well, yeah, but...
Give me 1,000 points of Wood Elf archers with Hagbane tips.
Yeah, and, you'll poison the death, right?
I'll deal Nagash. Yeah. Point for point.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, you'll roll enough sixes that...
The other two, Carfriends and the Glutkin, I would be on your side. But Nagash, I'm not sure. He can heal himself and...
All you need to do is 7 wounds in one turn. If I have 1,000 points of 15-point Wood Elf
archers... No, yes, 10 wounds.
10?
Yeah, and 7 toughness, but with your poison, you...
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just reading matter, right? Stuff. Do you have 1,000 points of archers?
No. 10? No. I have to paint more. Paint more.
Yeah, so... But I think... I hate using the argument of, well, we need to have cannons the way they are because now we've added new models to the game which only cannons can deal with.
No, but there were other big models before,
it's like,
too.
It's like GW's trying to work in reverse. Okay, we have to justify these things. We don't want to fix them. So let's put in something more broken so people will complain about the thing that was already broken. Yeah. It's an odd logic that only GW can get away with.
True.
But you know, it must work because we're not smart enough to stop them, so... We keep playing the game and buying the models. Yeah. So.
Well, they're saying, hey, they're buying it, so let's put something else.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the other things I'd mentioned was Steadfast. I thought Steadfast was maybe too strong and needed to be looked at. But then we discussed off-air about how Steadfast were the only ways you can deal with these giant, like, crazy things now. Without Steadfast, you just get Rickrolled, right?
So, it would be back to 4th and 5th edition where giant... characters were able to destroy units by themselves. So
now we've fixed Steadfast by breaking the rest of the game. We're back to the argument of they introduced something more broken to fix the stuff that was already broken.
Well, I, for one, was never really on the side of people who thought that Steadfast was too strong because you still have a break test to take. It's just...
Yeah, it's just on your base leadership. Yeah.
So if you lose, you still lose. So there's still a chance that you'll break. And, you know, having more ranks than... X is
good.
You know, so I'm not too sure I'd want that fix.
One thing fixed. I could see is maybe a disruption would remove Steadfast only instead of
just the ranks.
Ranks.
Yeah.
That would be a good idea because I think Steadfast as a rule is fine, but it's just there's no way to counter it except a forest.
A river.
A river.
That's right. River removes
fight in a river.
Those things we never see. Fight in a river, or be a Wood Elf player and drop a forest on someone.
Oh.
Alright, well, that actually finishes my list, and I think everyone else's list for 9th Ed wish listing. Curious to see what the listeners think. Would love to see them comment on the show, or post something on our Facebook about it. It's interesting to see what people have to say about the game. Everyone, like you said, everyone different eyes, right? Everyone sees the game differently.
Exactly.
Okay, well, it's Ann Alex. Thank you very much for coming on the show. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, it was a great fun. Thank you for inviting us.
You know, hopefully I'll have you back on next year for the next Fantasy Fest.
Yeah.
And hopefully next year I'll be able to attend.
Yeah, and maybe the Mega 40K that will happen in April. So
that would
if
be
you
cool.
want us back, we'll be happy.
That would be cool. What are you making a face over there, Mr. I Hate 40K? I'll make you play. I've made you play before. I can do it again.
I know.
Anyway, on that note, I guess we'll sign off. So, see you in 2 weeks, geeks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Read our blog at geeksofthenorth.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth. Or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, on Twitter at PRFilio and Antoine at Eltonio Berg. See you in 2 weeks, geeks.
This podcast is a proud member of the GeekCast Network. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other podcasts with a geek culture slant, head over to geekcastnetwork.com, where you will find podcasts such as Almost Podcast, a fan-driven companion podcast for the Almost Human television show, the GeekCast Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at geekcastnetwork.com.